basically is a servant of Duryodhana. So I agree that there is some limitation in his mentality there. But there's also a purpose in terms of the Leela, because it's a very beautiful pastime where after the end of the recitation of Bhagavad Gita, finally Arjuna understands I have to fight. So he picks up his Gandiva bow and he's on the chariot, he's ready to fight. And the demigods are so happy, all the soldiers are happy, the roar of gratitude, finally you understand you've got to fight. But then Yudhisthira, he takes off his armor, gets down from the chariot, drops his weaponry, and starts walking towards the enemy. And everybody goes, oh, what's happening? What's happening? Another delay. But then, what does he do? He goes to the other side. He goes first to Dronacharya, the Brahman, his teacher, his guru. He falls at his feet and he asks for blessings to fight the war. He also asks how to kill him. Now this is an amazing situation. It's beyond our capacity to understand this level and subtlety of culture. But it's such that he's approaching his guru for last instruction. Blessings and instruction. When we take instruction and we follow that instruction, we incur no sinful reaction. So he went to Dronacharya, he went to Bhismadev, his very dear relative. So many people, so many senior men on that side, he went to them, asked for blessings, asked how to kill them, asked for success in the battle. It's quite an amazing culture, this Kshatriya culture. One thing is to have guru, and the other thing is to hear him. I'd like to move on to the second section, if that's okay. Just watching the clock a bit. Is that okay? And if at the end, if we have more time, you're most welcome to ask questions further. Yes. It's not so much. Yeah. Actually, the respect for authority is another principle of Vedic culture. And when that is there, everything works. For example, if the child respects the mother, who is the first guru, that's wonderful. But that's not going to happen if the mother doesn't respect the husband, the father. Because the son or the child is going to see, well, I'm supposed to respect her, but she's not respecting him. So why should I respect her? So the whole Vedic system is based on authority principle. So that at all levels, this culture is there. It's very wonderful. Thank you for raising that. Okay, so this next section, we're talking here verses 14 to 20. Prabhupada is telling us the signs of victory for the Pandavas. Actually, two of these signs were mentioned in the purport to the first verse. Two of them are mentioned. Does anyone remember those? Yeah? Which ones were mentioned? No. In the first purport. No, don't speculate. I want you to get into the habit of only thinking Shastrically. Kurukshetra? Yes. And the other one? In the purport, Prabhupada's purport? Something about a righteous father? Krishna was there, right? He wanted to establish religiosity. So two have already been given. Excuse me? Kurukshetra is a holy place. So that will naturally favor those who are pious. Second one that was given in the first purport was Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is present and he's on the side of the Pandavas. Now in the purport to verse 14, Prabhupada reiterates the one about Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead and being on the side of the Pandavas, and he gives three more. The sounding of the transcendental conch shells by Krishna and Arjuna, the goddess of fortune is wherever Krishna is, and the invincible chariot given by Agni to Arjuna. This is in the 14th verse purport. All of them are mentioned there. Then the last indication of victory is found in the purport to verse 20. This is the one of Hanuman being on the flag of Arjuna. I tend to work a lot with visuals. So I put it in artwork here. If you can just take a mental picture of this, you can easily remember it. The only one that's missing, because I couldn't figure out how to fit it in, was Kurukshetra. Maybe I should have put a sign there or something. But it's very simple just to take a mental picture and capture the whole thing as a concept. Now, these signs of victory, they don't really mean much unless we've seen them in light of Arjuna's bewilderment. So Arjuna's bewilderment we'll study tomorrow, and for that reason I don't want to discuss this section too much now. I thought just to read a little bit of interest about Arjuna's chariot and Hanuman being on the flag of his chariot, and then I'd like to leave you with some food for thought in preparation for tomorrow's session. So I'd like to read from this Mahabharata once again about this wonderful chariot that Arjuna has been given by Agni. Now, Agni was having indigestion problems, and he really needed a lot of fire in his system. And he badly wanted to devour the whole Gandhava forest, but Indra kept interfering, so he couldn't do that. So he requested Arjuna and Krishna to help him get rid of this problem so that he could actually cure his illness and eat the whole Gandhava forest. And Arjuna says that if you can give me adequate means for fighting on the battlefield, then I will happily enable you to devour the Gandhava forest. Agni then began to meditate upon Varuna with a concentrated mind. Varuna could understand that Agni was summoning him, and so he came there at once. After showing Varuna great respect, Agni said, "O Lord of the waters, please give me the Gandiva bow, two inexhaustible quivers, and the celestial chariot that you had formerly received from Soma." This chariot was a chariot which helped the demigods win war against the demons. Four white horses were yoked to it, and they traveled faster than the wind, or even the mind. In addition, I request you to give... Varuna happily consented, and first of all he handed over the Gandiva bow to Agni. This bow is considered to be the chief of all weapons, and it is equal to 100,000 ordinary bows. Varuna next gave... I'll just read you a little extra about that. Arjuna then paid his obeisances to Agni and strung the bow. The twang of the string was heart-shattering. It thrilled Arjuna as he had never been thrilled before. Varuna next gave Agni two inexhaustible quivers and then called for a wonderful chariot that had been constructed by Vishvakarma and which was so dazzling that one could not gaze upon it for long. Arjuna respectfully circumambulated the celestial chariot, and then with the Gandiva bow in his hand, he joyfully mounted upon it, considering himself to be now capable of engaging in battle against anyone within the three worlds. So it was no ordinary chariot. It's very, very powerful. It was invincible. So this is surely a strong sign of victory. Then Hanuman's appearance on the flag, this is not something that we would say in preaching, but it's interesting for us as devotees. It wasn't an emblem of Hanuman. It was actually Hanuman. He was actually present on the flag. And of course, flags are very high up, so he could see everything that was happening in the battlefield. And as soon as he saw that somebody was about to shoot an arrow at Arjuna, just as they were about to shoot, he let out a terrible roar. And then, and they'd lose balance and they wouldn't be able to shoot the arrow. That's quite sweet. I wanted to read a little bit of Prabhupada's purport on this. It's on in the purport to verse 20. It's just on the about five lines down. The emblem of Hanuman on the flag of Arjuna is another sign of victory because Hanuman cooperated with the Lord Ram in the battle between Ram and Ravan, and Lord Ram emerged victorious. Now both Ram and Hanuman were present on the chariot of Arjuna to help him. Lord Krishna is Ram himself, and wherever Lord Ram is, his eternal servitor Hanuman and his eternal consort Sita, the goddess of fortune, are present. Therefore, Arjuna had no cause to fear any enemies whatsoever. And above all, the Lord of the senses, Lord Krishna, was personally present to give him direction. Thus all good counsel was available to Arjuna in the matter of executing the battle. In such auspicious conditions, arranged by the Lord for his eternal devotee, lay the signs of assured victory. There's something very, very sweet by Prabhupada commenting on the significance of this in a lecture he gave in London in 73. It's a Bhagavad Gita lecture. It's so sweet. Just like nowadays also, every nation has different types of flags. So Arjuna also had his flag on the chariot. The flag was on top of his chariot, and it was marked with Hanuman, who fought for Lord Ramchandra. He is fighting for Krishna. So he is also following the footsteps of Rajangaji. Vaishnavism is like that. Vaishnava should follow his previous Mahajan, his authority. Arjuna is fighting for Krishna. He is following the previous fighting Acharya, Hanumanji. Therefore, he has depicted his flag with Hanuman, that Hanumanji, Rangaji, kindly help me. This is Vaishnavism. I have come here to fight for Lord Krishna. You fought also for the Lord. Kindly help me. This is the idea. Kapidvajja. So any activities of the Vaishnav, they should always pray to the previous Acharya. Kindly help me. This is Vaishnav is always thinking himself helpless, helpless, and begging help from the previous Acharya. Such a sweet commentary by Prabhupada. So before we move on to the next section, I just want to leave you with one question in relation to this. It's a seed thought for tomorrow's class. Is there any value in such indications of victory if one is on the mental platform, if one is not Krishna conscious? Does everyone understand? Would you like me to repeat it? Is there any value in having all of these signs of victory, all of these indications of victory, if we are on the mental platform, if we are not Krishna conscious? Just think about it when you're reading tonight's homework. Now the next section I've divided into two because both are worthy of independent discussion. 21 to 25, Krishna appears as Bhakta Vatsal. Does everyone know what these words mean, Bhakta Vatsal? Anyone that doesn't? Yeah? It means Krishna as the friend of his devotee. Okay? Krishna as friend of his devotee. So it's very, very interesting that Krishna is not appearing in Bhagavad Gita as God. He's appearing as Bhakta Vatsal, friend of his devotee. And I have some real nectar to share with you on this one. The first thing I'd like to do is to read from Burijan Prabhu's book, page 1011, if you'd like to read it by yourself later. He says, "This is Krishna's first appearance in Bhagavad Gita. What is he doing? He is driving Arjuna's chariot and accepting his orders. This is glorious. Krishna, the supreme controller, is taking orders from his devotee as if he were his menial servant." Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, "Although Lord Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, out of his causeless mercy, he was engaged in the service of his friend. He never fails in his affection for his devotees, and thus he is addressed here as infallible. The relationship between the Lord and his servitor is very sweet and transcendental. The servitor is always ready to render service to the Lord, and similarly, the Lord is always seeking an opportunity to render some service to the devotee. Of all of Krishna's qualities, his Bhaktivatsala quality is most endearing." I'd like next to read from one of our other stalwarts in Bhagavad Gita study, Mother Naraini. This is a compilation of her study notes in preparation for classes in Bhagavad Gita, where she's combined Prabhupada lecture with Mahabharata. It's also very, very nice. Krishna is called Bhakta Vatsala. He is very affectionate to his devotees. He gets pleasure in being controlled by his devotees. Although Krishna has all good qualities, he is not proud. He drove Arjuna's chariot. Krishna wasn't thinking, what will people think if I drive a chariot? No king would ever lower himself to do such menial service. Karna's foster father was a chariot driver, and for that reason Karna was not accepted as a Kshatriya, and he was looked down upon. At Draupadi's Swayamvara, she rejected him on these very grounds. Yet Krishna accepted such a low person to please his devotee. Accepted such a low position to please his devotee. In the battle of Kurukshetra, when chasing Jarasandha, in the midst of the battle, Arjuna's horses became tired, and so he made a hole of arrows and created a lake so that the horses could drink. And at that time, Krishna took care of the horses by plucking out all the arrows, dressing their wounds, massaging them, giving them water. He performed all the duties of a groom, a chariot driver. Why did he take so much trouble? Out of his affection for Arjuna. He takes more pleasure in serving his devotee than he does in being served. So we should learn from this that it is better to serve Krishna's servant than to try to serve him directly. This is also from a lecture by Srila Prabhupada given in London in 73. This actually gives an insight into the very wonderful relationship, loving relationship between Arjuna and Krishna. Very, very relishable to read. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Krishna knows, I'm not the controller, I'm the controlled. He's a devotee, he knows his position. Therefore, he's not trying to control Krishna, but he is ordering Krishna, my dear Krishna. He is not addressing as Krishna Achyuta, now you place my chariot between the two parties. This is ordering. Let me read that again. Therefore, he is not trying to control Krishna, but he is ordering Krishna. So he's in the predicament where Krishna wants him to instruct him, but that's not his mood. That means that Arjuna is becoming controller and Krishna is becoming controlled, just the opposite. Therefore, Arjuna knows his subordinate position and he is ordering Krishna. So indirectly, he is begging to be excused. My dear Krishna, I cannot order you. Order must come from you. But because you promised to carry out my order, you wanted to become my chariot driver, therefore I am ordering. I am not in the position of ordering to you, and you promised to carry out my order, and I think that you are fixed up in your promise. Therefore I am asking you, Achyuta, you don't fall from your promise. So if we serve Krishna, that is our Achyuta position. If we deny to serve Krishna, that is Vichyuta, fallen condition. Achyuta and Vichyuta. So to become Krishna conscious means Achyuta Gotra. Achyuta Gotra. Gotra means of the same family of rishis. Gotra, from the rishis. So we have to become Achyuta Gotra. We have to again belong to the family of Krishna. It's so beautiful. So we can understand that Arjuna is completely aware that, now wait a minute, I'm not the controller. I'm not supposed to be giving instructions. But he's bound through Krishna's desire to give instruction. So the sweetness of this intensity of relationship can be felt there. It's very wonderful. This very special relationship between Arjuna and Krishna is especially evident if you study the names that Arjuna calls Krishna by in Bhagavad Gita. You can best study them by reading Srila Prabhupada's purports. Also, the acharyas give further understandings that are useful. I'd like to speak a little bit now about two of Krishna's names, Hrishikesh and Achyuta. Can anyone tell me the meaning of Hrishikesh? Yes? Controller of the senses. Okay, good. Achyuta? Excuse me? Infallible, yes. Infallible. So I want to explore a little bit what Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas say about these two names. Because we are not in Arjuna's position, our relationship with Krishna is not yet fully developed. So by studying the relationship the mentality and the mood of someone whose relationship with Krishna is fully developed, we can get insight into how to develop our own. For example, do we always call Krishna Krishna? Or according to our mood, according to our prayer, do we call him other names? These names have a certain potency. They're appropriate to a certain request. So if we can expand our vocabulary, we'll be able to expand our understanding of our relationship with Krishna, and that would be very wonderful. So today we're going to look at two names. Rishikesh. In his word to verse 15, Srila Prabhupada translates Rishikesh as Krishna, the Lord who directs the senses of his devotees. Now, I'd like to read the last section of this purport. It's very, very instructive. This is 15, last section. Sorry, it's the last section of the first paragraph. Actually, we'll start from the beginning. Lord Krishna is referred to as Rishikesh in this verse because he is the owner of all senses. The living entities are part and parcel of him, and therefore the senses of all living entities are also part and parcel of his senses. Now, this has very special implications in terms of Arjuna choosing to have Krishna on his side and Duryodhana choosing to have his army. I'd like to share this insight with you. Duryodhana was so happy to have Krishna's army and thought that Arjuna was a fool for choosing Krishna instead of his army, even though Krishna made it clear that he would not fight. However, Krishna is Rishikesh, master of the total senses of all living entities. It may appear that he is doing nothing, but actually he is doing everything and is in control of everything. Interesting, isn't it? So the army may be on the side of Duryodhana, but Krishna has full control of the senses of all of those men in that army. Very interesting point. So we can appreciate from this that there are certain limitations in dealing with things externally. It always pays to try and look a little deeper into circumstances that we're dealing with in day-to-day life. We'll skip a couple of sentences, or one long sentence, and go into the next section. The Lord, situated in the hearts of all living entities, directs their senses, but he directs in terms of the surrender of the living entity. And in the case of a pure devotee, he directly controls the senses. Here, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the Lord directly controls the transcendental senses of Arjuna, and thus his particular name of Rishikesh. The Lord has different names according to his different activities. This is a very important point, that Krishna, according to his activities, he has different names. Those different activities mean different moods. So when we're approaching the Lord, we think a little bit about the mood of our prayer, and we can choose a name appropriately. For example, his name is Madhusudan because he killed the demon of the name Madhu. His name is Govinda because he gives pleasure to the cows and to the senses. His name is Vasudev because he appears as a son of Vasudev. His name is Devaki Nandana because he accepted Devaki as his mother. His name is Yashoda Nandana because he awarded his childhood pastimes to Yashoda at Vrindavan. His name is Partha Sarathi because he worked as charity of his friend Arjuna. Similarly, his name is Rishikesh because he gave direction to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Now, as an example of just how direct Krishna's direction to Arjuna was, and that is given very clearly by Prabhupada and the Acharyas. Let me just have a read of that. We're looking here at verse 25. Purport. Just the first couple of sentences, Prabhupada says, as the supersoul of all living entities, Lord Krishna could understand what was going on in the mind of Arjuna. The use of the word Hrishikesh in this connection indicates that he knew everything. And last sentence, the mind of Arjuna was thus predicted by the Lord in friendly joking. Predicated or predicted? Might be just our American and Australian accents. Completely different, yeah. This is the latest version that says predicted. Yeah? So this has actually some quite interesting connotations. I'd like to read to you what the Acharyas say about this. Again, it gives some indication of the intimacy between Krishna and Arjuna. Verse 25 reads, in the presence of Bhishma, Drona, and all the other chieftains of the world, the Lord said, just behold, Partha, all the Kurus assembled there. And then Virajan Prabhu is saying, hundreds of millions of warriors were in the Kuru armies, yet Krishna drove Arjuna's chariot directly before Bhishma and Drona. In that way, Krishna forced Arjuna to see that both his grandfather and his guru were determined to oppose him in battle. Krishna thus drew out Arjuna's familial affection so that he could speak Bhagavad Gita. Krishna was teasing Arjuna. It is only Kurus on both sides who are assembled. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan adds his explanation of Krishna's words. Because you are the son of my father's sister, I am going to serve as your chariot driver. But now you are about to abandon your desire to fight. Thus Krishna jokingly implied, this is what Prabhupada is referring to in his purport, what's the use of just looking at the army? What's the use of just looking at the army? You have to fight the army. And in this way, Krishna affirmed the thoughts in Arjuna's mind. So this is quite a deep subject matter, that Krishna is a controller of his devotees' senses. So he knew that there was some disturbance in the heart of Arjuna, that some hesitation was there. So just to really bring that out, so he had opportunity to speak Bhagavad Gita, 640 million people on the battlefield, where does he drive the chariot? Right in front of his guru and his grandfather. So when we remember the culture of Arjuna and his affection, you can understand what this would do to his heart, completely bewilder him. And then Krishna gets good opportunity to speak Bhagavad Gita. The use of the name Acharya by a tutor by Arjuna is also a very deep meaning. We can have a look at verse 21-22, purports to this. Prabhupada says quite a lot. We'll start from the beginning, read the first para. I'd like you to listen very carefully because I'm going to ask you questions from this purport. Although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, out of his causeless mercy he was engaged in the service of his friend. He never fails in his affection for his devotees, and thus he is addressed herein as infallible. As charioteer, he had to carry out the orders of Arjuna, and since he did not hesitate to do so, he is addressed as infallible. Although he has accepted the position of a charioteer for his devotee, his supreme position was not challenged. In all circumstances, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hrishikesh, the Lord of the total senses. The relationship between the Lord and his servitor is very sweet and transcendental. We've read this before in Burjan, so we can understand just this last sentence. Since he is the master, everyone is under his orders and no one is above him to order him. But when he finds that a pure devotee is ordering him, he attains transcendental pleasure, although he is the infallible master of all circumstances. So who can tell me the three reasons here that Prabhupada gives why Krishna is called a tutor by Arjuna? Three reasons he gives, just a little section that we just read. Yes? Just give one of them. Yes? He never abandons his devotee. Very good. Never fails in his affection towards his devotee. Another one? That's a nice point. But what I want us to... It will take some time for us to develop this skill. But I really want us to get in the habit of consciously reading the purport and then seeing exactly what Prabhupada is saying there. What you're saying is perfect. But it's the same point that Lila Madhuri Mataji has made. So we're looking for two more points that are made by Srila Prabhupada. Yes, Govinda? Excuse me? Yes. Regardless of what he does, even he becomes a menial servant of someone, he is still God. Even when he's a young baby, he can cook katana. Whatever his circumstance, externally as we see it, still he is God. This is very reassuring for us as devotees. Whatever the circumstance, Krishna never falls from his position. That is a great solace to us who are so fallen, isn't it? So there's one more thing that Prabhupada says, another reason Prabhupada gives. Ananda? Yes. This is another principle of Vedic culture, duty. It's a principle. We have our duties, both in our vanas and ashrams, both as devotees, even as devotees we have our duties, four regulative principles, minimum 16 rounds, faithfulness to the guru and the parampara. So this concept of duty is demonstrated here by Krishna himself. It is an important principle of Vedic culture. Very good, thank you. Our mother Narayani last year gave another reason, which is not in the purport, but is also very interesting. She said that he is also called a tutor because he doesn't change bodies. He is Sachit Ananda, Vigraha. So therefore, he doesn't ever forget anything and he doesn't fall into illusion. His situation is not like ours. So I'd like to ask if there are any questions, specific questions about what I've said this morning. Try and keep it within this framework, and then we'll ask some questions from your reading last night. Any questions on what we've heard this morning, or it's all okay? Yeah, please. Mm-hmm. You didn't understand the importance of that point? Basically, there are two separate points, actually three separate points that Prabhupada makes in the purport there. First point he makes is whether you're a devotee or not a devotee, Krishna is a controller of our senses and mind. Now he will control differently. He will control indirectly if we are not a devotee. If we are a devotee, then according to our level of surrender, he will, to that degree, he will control directly our senses. Now here, we are talking about Arjun, who is a pure devotee of the Lord. He's a Nitya Siddha. So his whole heart is sold out to Krishna. He wants to be controlled by Krishna, as Prabhupada so beautifully explains. So Krishna controls him. And there's another interesting point. The impersonalists, they talk about oneness as merging, don't they? Merging into Brahman. That's their idea of oneness. But the devotee's idea of oneness is completely different. It's a oneness of heart with Krishna, a oneness of desire. So when we are purified enough of our own desires, which are actually impediments and problems for us, we're purified of those desires and we start to identify ourselves more with what does Krishna want? At that time, Krishna starts to make arrangements in our lives. Things that we didn't think we could do, we can suddenly do. Like that. And in relation to the point of Krishna putting the army right before these two, this is more or less like a drama. There's a specific purpose to this drama. Krishna wants to speak Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna is his instrument for doing that. He's a perfect, fully surrendered instrument. So Krishna is using him as such and putting him in a position where he'll become bewildered. Not in our way of being bewildered, but bewildered by Yogamaya. So that he will then... I'd like to tell you a very interesting story about Arjuna, because I don't want you to have the misconception that he actually fell into bewilderment. Do I have time? Does anybody have a lot? Is there a lot of questions from the reading last night? Let me get some idea of that first before I get into storytelling. Do we have a lot of questions? Raise your hand if you do have questions from your reading last night. One? Anyone else? Two? Okay. Okay, so maybe we'll tell it quickly. We quite often use the term pure devotee, Nitya Siddha. And because we use it so frequently and casually, we tend to lose a feeling for the depth of what that means. So I'd like to tell you a story about Arjun, which will indicate just what the implications of this are, this term is. One day in his palace, Duryodhana was very, very frustrated and angry. And he was storming up and down the corridor, kicking things, and he was so angry. And at that time, Narad Muni, as he quite often seems to do, he flew over the scene and he saw it and he thought, this looks interesting. Why is Duryodhana so upset? So he came down to see what was happening. So he came down and he inquired of Duryodhana, "What's the problem? You seem very, very disturbed this morning." Narad Muni said, and then Duryodhana said, "I cannot understand this Krishna. He gives so much support, so much time to these Pandavas, especially to that Arjuna. I'm equally qualified. I'm just as good as he is. Why is he not giving me the same kind of attention? I can't understand this. I'm really upset about this." So Narad Muni said to him, "You really want to know why Arjuna gives so much attention why Krishna gives so much attention to Arjuna?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Okay, you dress in simple cloth and you meet me at the main gate of the palace at midnight tonight. I'll explain it to you." So Kshatriyas by nature are very curious, and there is one saying, curiosity killed the cat, information brought it back.
What?
Curiosity killed the cat, information brought it back. It's just one of those inane statements. Anyway, so Duryodhana met him at the palace gate at 12, and Narad Muni said, "Now we're going to the sleeping quarters of Arjuna." He took him to the sleeping quarters. Arjuna was there, fast asleep. Narad Muni said to him, "I want you to go and put your ear to Arjuna's hair." Now, Duryodhana saying, "I want you to put your ear to Arjuna's hair." So Duryodhana starting to think, this is too much. He's just going to make a fool of me. You know, I'm not sure that I can buy this one. Anyway, his curiosity is still very strong. So he said, "All right, it's night. No one's going to see it if I make a fool of myself. And I really want to know why Krishna is giving so much attention to Arjuna." So he goes over to Arjuna. He puts his ear to Arjuna's hair and he hears Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Krishna's whole being was pervaded with Krishna consciousness to the point that every cell of his body is chanting Hare Krishna. Isn't that amazing? So please, when we're reading of Arjuna's bewilderment, don't fall into the bewilderment of thinking that he's bewildered, because he's not. This is an arrangement by Krishna for our benefit. Okay, before we ask for questions, I just want to make one thing very clear so we don't disturb Prashanta's time, because we will be finishing right on 11:30. That is that in the break from 11:30 to 11:45, I'll be outside the door with the extra materials that you're quite welcome to take if you want, and a form for you to write your name, etc., and give the Lakshmi. Please do give the exact Lakshmi, otherwise it will be a real headache. I did say that tomorrow would be the last day, but that is unfair, because yesterday was quite a rushed period. So up until the end of the Saturday class, you can give me your information. Did everyone notice that with the attendance sheet there was a second sheet which was asking who wanted to see the Bhagavad Gita interactive after the Saturday class? So if you weren't aware of that, please fill that in so that I get an idea of whether we can do that as one session or we'll need to do it as two. Okay, so we have some time for questions. Bethany, you had some question about your reading? Please give us a reference so that we can see the source.
I just have one, and I'll put up page.
Very nice. Where are we reading from? What did you hear the double meaning was? I think it's actually in Brajam Prabhu's book. Let me just check. Which text was it? 25, was it? 24. Okay. 124. What was the second? It is not in his book. What was the second meaning that you heard? Because actually Prabhupada gives two understandings in his purport. It may have been an elaboration on that. Because Prabhupada is saying that, as we read here, a devotee of Krishna can conquer birth, sleep, and ignorance simply by thinking of Krishna constantly. This is called Krishna consciousness or samadhi. So we can see that there's two sides to it. Not only sleep, but also ignorance. Those two things are there. Was it the third thing? It may have been an elaboration on this, because we could actually give a full class on these two states of ignorance. Sleep is a state of ignorance, and our waking state is also a state of ignorance if we're not Krishna conscious. Maybe you can ask Narayani and see if she has any further understanding of that. Be worth doing. I'd like you to develop your relationship with her. The question was that she had heard that there were two meanings to this word Gudakesh. So I pointed out that the two meanings are given in the purport, but she wasn't sure whether they were the two meanings that she'd heard before. There may be a third one, according to her understanding. Lila Madhuri Prabhu, you wanted to... Actually, I wanted to stop using Prabhu. Does anybody know the female for Prabhu?
There is one, you know.
We have a culture of our own. We should maybe, you know, start practicing it. So, we are not Prabhus. We're not imitation men. We're Prabhis. Okay? So, when we address each other, and please correct me if I use Prabhu, I'm in a very bad habit of doing that. So, but we do have our own culture. So, we are Prabhi. Okay, so, Lila Madhuri Prabhi, what would you like to say? Verse 10, purport, yes. While you're thinking about what is the problem, anybody else have a question? We have to always catch the mood of the acharya. So here we are talking within the verses that are explaining Duryodhana's personality, his mood. So according to Duryodhana, it was well ascertained that he was going to be victorious, because he's only dealing with externals. So Prabhupada is giving us his understanding here. He's not giving Prabhupada's understanding. Is that clear?
It's the material ascertainment of the military situation.
Right.
My chances are increased, you know.
Yeah. But as this is true, it's a very good point. But as Prabhupada says so often, this kind of mentality is equivalent to this. Isn't it? It doesn't matter how many there are, it doesn't make any sense. So Arjuna may have less numbers in terms of military forces. He may have so many things that are there, but there's a one there. It's a very important point for us to remember. You know, if we identify with our own ability, we're looking at this. If we're identifying with Krishna's mercy, we're looking at this. A whole different world, a whole different mindset, and a very important one. Okay. Okay, you have 5 minutes, no problem. Let's see how we go. No one else? Oh, you had a question? Okay, we'll hear one more from Lila Madhuri Prabhu, and then we'll hear one of yours. Is that okay? No problem. Please. Well, I'll give another devotee a chance, and we'll come back to you if nobody else is wanting to ask. Verse 18, yes? This is an interesting point. I could answer this from many angles of vision. Oh, so you didn't hear the question? Okay, the question is, would you like to come and speak it into the mic? As you like. Yeah. Actually, this would take quite some answering, because it's a long story, but I'll try and answer it very, very short, in a short form. It's mentioned by the acharyas that those whose conscience are named, they will be survivors of the battle. Those whose conscience are named... whose conscious have names. They will be survivors of the battle. So we see here that conch shells. They would be survivors of the battle. It's just a subtle point that this Krishna is speaking here. But with Abhimanyu, that's a whole story in itself, because he's a very special soul. He's a son of Soma, and his father's very, very attached to him, and he didn't want to give him. He didn't want him to come down here for the battle. So he was under some pressure to send him. He was part of the pastime that would take place. So he said, I'll give him, but I'll only give him until he's 16. Then he has to come back. And he has to die a glorious death, a death that everyone will talk about always. So, you know, again, it's talking about the intricacies and subtleties of things, that it's not meaning doomed in the sense of as inauspicious for him, but rather that he would lose his embodiment. Is that okay? Okay, well, how long is your question, Yashodaji? Okay. It's actually a very sacred place. Long before the Battle of Kurukshetra, the Battle of Kurukshetra was fought there specifically because it was a holy place. It's a place where the demigods would go to perform sacrifices. It's when Parashuram, he slaughtered the 21 generations of Kshatriyas, he embanked all the blood of those Kshatriyas at this place. I don't know how that's auspicious, but that's recorded as being a reason. You know, so it's seen as a very powerful place for Kshatriyas to perform their dharmic duties, which is religious war. It's also seen as a very powerful place for Brahmanas to perform their Vedic sacrifices, etc. But it's not only a sacred place in terms of this battle, but long, long, long before that. Although Prabhupada does mention in the purport that it's sacred because Krishna is there. So there's a special significance now. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is there. Okay, so that I'm not sure of. Does anybody know the answer to that question? Who chose battlefield of Kurukshetra as the place of battle?
They agreed.
Oh, they agreed? Uh-huh. They agreed. That's a very big place. And the other thing that why reason they agreed is because it's also far away from the women, the children, the old men, the villages, towns like that. So it's a sacred place. You can read Krishna book and find that out. Read Krishna book, you'll understand. Okay, we'll have to finish now in fairness to Prashanta, and we'll meet again tomorrow. For tomorrow's homework, if you can finish a chapter, and we'll be going through the fill-out sheets, so please bring your student workbooks as well. Okay? Please accept my humble obeisances.